Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there, like Warriors coach Steve Kerr or Heat forward Duncan Robinson. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest join us. We got a little first-timer on with us. You can check him out at Bleacher Report. He does a series called Untold Stories that you need to check out and that we'll talk about a bit more. And I say this with, like, no reservation, and you guys know I don't do this much. This is one of the dudes who's kind of next in this game. His name is Master Tess Fashion. Master, what's going on, man?
What's good with you, man?
I'll tell people, too, part of the fun of having him on is, like, I turned 40 this year, and if I ever forget it, this will be the dude to remind me, because he's the one dude in my life that stay out here trying to call me old. Like, I don't even think you know who old is. I can't wait till your ass is 35. It's going to be amazing.
I got 5 more years, but I've had to kind of ease back and pull back on how many times I call you old, because I'm the person now in quarantine that sleeps at 9 p.m. and wakes up at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Let me tell you this. Like, one thing about you is you grind, right? So you're not one of the people that I'll ever look at. Like, these youngsters don't grind. You grind. But I bet you looking up and you seeing 22, 23 not grinding out here, ain't you?
I sure do it. And I feel the difference. But now it's like, before you could grind 18, 19 hours in the day. And now it's like, damn, if I'm up till 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning working on something, the next day, I'm going to be in a mess. Either I'm going to feel this, or the people around me going to feel this. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, all right, let me take this time to just chill now a little bit.
Yeah, the thing that changes more than anything as you get older is the morning. What the morning means to you. What you need to do with the morning. Like, when I was writing, I used to do all my writing, like, late at night. Like, I would mess around and do stuff. Like, go to sleep at 8 so that I could wake up at 1 and then get up and get on the grind and send it in before my deadline at like 7 or whatever it is, take a nap, get back at it. Like, I remember when I was in college, I had a summer that, like, I was on the yard and I was just around. I had a job on campus. And I remember I never kicked it on the weekend because we kicked it so hard during the week. Like, I would be out kicking it till 6 o'clock in the morning, go home, take a shower, like, go to work, you know what I'm saying? And I would do that 4 days a week and then crash out Friday and Saturday. I cannot imagine doing anything that stupid at this point in my life. Like, I have no idea the last time I was awake at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Or 3? I don't even know the last time I was up, especially in quarantine. What if I be up at 2 o'clock in the morning for a quarantine?
Watching CNN, watching the news, like, that really ain't nothing else going on right
now.
That's
what I'm saying. That's what I say. That Perry Mason marathon episode will roll back around. Don't you worry. You know,
like, things are not going anywhere, and you ain't got nothing else to do but work and binge watch something.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to sleep, man. Like, if it comes down to it. But, man, let's talk about Untold Stories, the second season going on this year with Untold Stories. And it's you and, like, I think it's, is it all NFL players now or just largely NFL players?
We've been focusing to start this thing off with retired NFL players. And so whole purpose and whole goal, which is being able to peel back the layer, especially in the NFL, as we already know, is very militaristic in terms of what they envision their league being operated off of. And it doesn't allow individuality to really thrive and shine in the league. But then through that, you end up minimizing a lot of personalities and people in other instances, races, you know, different people in these different subsidies within the culture of the NFL. And so basically this platform has just allowed people to just be themselves. And I think it was really cool. Obviously seeing the success has been incredible, but someone like Ricky Williams jumping on the show and not even have to explain to him what we're trying to do here. Right. And him simply saying, like, after we were done shooting, like, yo, this was really cool. I wish we would have had this when I was around. Mm-hmm. And that kind of fulfillment in terms of, like, what we all as a team tried to accomplish with this and getting that kind of stamp of approval from Ricky is, for me, it makes it all worth it, because now there's an opportunity to provide that platform.
Well, it's also an excuse for you to do stuff like wear white jeans.
Yo, hey.
Like, how much
I was looking fresh in a mug, though.
Yeah, I'm about to say this, and I'm not saying this to shade you, just to be clear, right? Because, like, I look at it, I'm like, okay, cool, I see what you got going. You know, it ain't no I would do, right? But that's not the point, right? Like, I see, like, I know that within the aesthetic of what y'all got going, like, that works. But I watched one of those, and I was just imagining you in the mirror, like in the full length joint, trying on all the fits, like doing all the poses, trying to figure out, like, yo, how would I look leading with a pool cue? Because all the videos are done at a pool hall. How would I look leading up on the wall with this pool cue, with this one all right here, right?
The one piece of advice I gave the team was just make sure I have something like a bomber jacket. You know what I'm saying? If there was anything which I was envisioning in terms of what I would be doing while holding this pool stick, was let me at least put one of my hands in my pocket, because that is exactly how I would be in this space. Yeah. And so them being able to be more flexible with kind of what we wear and dress, especially on the Bleacher Report side, it's allowed me just to be me. And I think me being me allows other athletes to be themselves.
There's a partial you in this, because the other thing that makes me feel like, okay, I'm the old dude in this relationship is, I be looking at you and the pictures that you take for it, and I be wanting to say to you what my brother used to always say to me, which was, smile, fool! Like, why are you out here trying to look so hard? I go back and look at every picture that I took from, like, my early to mid-20s. It is like, I wasn't fooling anybody, right? If I was trying to look hard, this was not a convincing rendering of it. But then if I look back at pictures of my brother from that same age, he doing the same exact thing. I don't know what it is. As I look at you, I'm like, yo, man, it's okay. Show them teeth.
Hey, I'm working on it because I like to smile. I don't know what it is when I see a camera and I'm just like, I just become neutral. You know what I'm saying? And it looks like that resting base that everyone talks about. But it's like, it's not even the intention or the goal that I have in my mind. It's like, I had a great time. But the photo will not represent that in any way possible.
Well, that's like being highly questionable. Like, all kinds of things will come up on that. And people be like, yo, why your face always straight there? And I'm just like, yo, in this moment, I'm just posted up. Like, it ain't It ain't even really a thing. But no, I look at that. I'm like, oh, no. Here come Bass. Head cocked to the side in that pose. Like, arms crossed. I'm just like, yeah, dog. I've been there. I'm telling you. My relationship with you is in large part also for me just a, oh, so I'm that guy now, huh?
Yeah. That look like from your vantage point. And I'm sure 5-10 years from now.
Oh, Tom Cubbett. Now, that's the thing. It's like when stop and think about this for a second, right? For me, at least in this game that I'm in, here's a wild thought. Like, the anniversary of it came and passed is not that big a deal, but it's still worth noting. I did my first episode of Around the Horn 10 years ago last month.
Oh, we got to celebrate that, man.
Yeah, but think about this, right? I was the young dude showing up, and I was doing stuff like had the championship belt and a pecky rag on and all of that stuff. Yeah.
But I loved it, though.
It was incredible, right? Like, I reached a point where I'm like, okay, now I need to do something else. But the thing is, I was the young dude, right? Like, it was this huge and obvious chasm between me and basically everybody else who did that show, like, other than, like, Mike Smith, because we're the same age. But past that, it was a giant chasm. And the difference, again, is, like, Mike was, like, a newspaper dude. So when he came in, he was fairly buttoned down in presentation and stuff like that. And I came in as the outsider. I was showing up wearing literally my lucky jacket, right? You know, and all this stuff. Like, you know, like, but that's what it was. But it was just like, yo, I was young then. I can't make that same argument now. Like, I'm not old, but I am not on, like, the cutting edge.
Here's the funny part about all of this. You doing young people's right now. You got your hair out now, you know what I'm saying? You over here taking shirtless pictures on Instagram, you know? You doing yoga. That's very millennial of you, man.
Hey, man.
You're doing all the young people's right now.
Hey, man, stay youthful. But I will say this, I do think this gets lost in this is, I'm not up on, like, all the super duper new stuff, but when it comes to doing, like, new media type stuff, I am still quietly, like, OG of young people stuff, right? I've been doing a live stream podcast for 9 years now. Like, all the Twitch stuff and IG Live and stuff like that people are doing.
I check people, Clubhouse, obviously this popping beta audio platform right now. I check everyone to see when they join. And everyone joined during this, like, cultural wave over the last month. You know
I was
saying?
On in March.
You was back. You was in the spring.
Yeah, somebody got me out early. But you know what the problem was? So, A, I got on too early. because it was all still like venture capitalists and, you know, like people that I wanted to kind of get on with, but I was looking at what they was talking about and I was like,
bugs and software. And
I wasn't. I wasn't quite in the place. So like, there was that with Clubhouse. But the other thing that happened with Clubhouse is right after it dropped, somebody wrote some news report. Basically, they had sat up on Clubhouse and recorded a conversation, and then the conversation wound up getting leaked. And I was like, "Oh, okay.
Oh no,
this ain't nothing. This ain't nothing. I really feel like I can trust." And so now it's cracking on Clubhouse. Like, I went on into one conversation, and it's a little different in my place on Clubhouse, because I went on for one conversation and people start calling you to the front of the room.
It's very interesting to see how different moderators operate, because some of them are about peace and love, unity, let's build. Other people just want to be messy and just want to throw out messy stuff. And then other people are just very like, you know, hey, I see you not speaking, Bomani, would you like to step up to the table, brother man?
The thing is, I just got here. I'm just trying to listen. I had to get on and be like, yo, I don't even really know what y'all talking about, man. So y'all going to have to like bring me up to speed on the conversation.
Because the title will say something very broad and generic, and you're thinking like, all right, cool, I'm coming here to link up with people in Las Vegas. But for some reason, they're talking about Cleveland. And you you need a couple minutes to figure out how this thing is flowing.
And now my thing is, one thing I don't like about Clubhouse is, hey, man, all the people I was trying to get away from is all showing up.
Everyone from every social media app that you know within this space is literally right here.
You know, here's what happens, though, is that it is impossible for a social media platform to not ultimately become played out in some form of fashion, because the only thing that can distinguish social media platforms from one another is the users, right? Like, otherwise, you're just kind of talking about interface and some little change in the concept, right?
But we came up with a new feature. Ultimately, the whole goal of the feature is to attract more users.
Different ways. Right. And so more people come in. And now, again, what makes this kind of cool then dissipates and goes away, because you can't, exclusivity is not the right way to put it, because that implies a discrimination that I'm not really talking about. The advantage of Facebook, the reason Facebook will never go away, is everybody's on Facebook. Problem with Facebook is that everybody's on Facebook.
My parents are on Facebook, and I knew that was my time to delete that thing. Because my parents barely know how to use a computer. Who the hell taught you how to use Facebook? There's some little Eritrean kid out there in Dallas somewhere that taught my mom how to use Facebook. Thank you, bro. I deleted that joint ASAP.
So what's wild for me about Facebook, like as a platform, and I have like Facebook pages, like I got the fan page for the work stuff, I got my personal page or whatever. But when I first started like doing this stuff and radio or whatever, I was accepting Facebook friendships from strangers. Like, that was just what I was doing. And because of that visibility, if I started talking about something on Facebook, I had never had to go anywhere else for a conversation. Like, there was always a conversation on there. So like the news feed on Facebook, I never, ever really went on that thing, because when I would log on to Facebook, I just go straight to my page because there was always something cracking. And so I had no idea. I mean, I'll say fairly recently, it was years ago, but like how many people were just going down the Facebook news feed and keeping up with people, because I was on Facebook early, like when it was school stuff. We weren't going there for updates. We was just trying to look at pictures.
Yeah, exactly. Like
your pictures. See, I was on it before likes. Like, before these things were even options. It was your homeboy saying he hollering at some girl at another school. Oh, let's go see what she looks like. Like, that's one thing Facebook has eliminated. And I feel like you didn't grow up with this because you grew up in the era of having all these apps. When I was a kid, there was the era of, I mean, I got a girl, but she don't go to school here.
Yeah. I feel like I caught the tail end of that, because it still would be, hey, somebody else from this friend group tagged a picture of a friend of yours. Yeah. Who's that person? Who are their mutuals? All right, let me just add them in the event we end up being in the same space.
Yeah.
So that way it's like, hey, I see you. You see me. If we see each other, what's up?
No, what I'm talking about is cats lying about their girl at another school. That was the move, is that if you didn't have a girl or you went, I don't know, girl. See, they be thinking I don't even be on them girls. They'll know what I do when I be down there hanging out at my cousin's house.
That's how the capping started, the evolution of capping. Is that
Yes. All those cats would have a second life at their, because, you know, I went to school right outside Houston. So, like, all these cats would have this mythical second life at their cousin's house. In Houston. Like, somehow they were the only 14, 15, 16-year-olds that was patient enough to wait till Friday to try to, like, holler at girls or like girls, right? They just had this stoic discipline when they was walking up and down our hallways for their mythical girl who go to another school.
It's interesting how like naive and innocent that kind of feels now when you look at the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
And the way that people are now using this in a very tribalistic way, where before it's like, hey man, I'm just trying to like, you know, live a life that I try to envision.
Yes.
It's like, I need you to vote for this person that won't do any good for you.
Everything's changed, man. Watching the game flip up is a fascinating thing. The interesting thing I think about Untold Stories, though, to me, is that I'm looking at some of the people that you were talking to on the show, and some of them, like Ed Reed, for example, little bit before your time, right? He's been a player recently, but I don't think that you think of, and like just age-wise, 2001 Miami Hurricanes means something different to me than it means to you. Like, I guess you was like 8-9 years old when that's going on, you know?
I was 10. You were 10.
Yeah.
I would say my first football memory I remember was the 95 Cowboys, which sounds crazy to think that you remember something when you're 4 or 5 years old.
No, but that makes sense. I mean, they won the Super Bowl.
Exactly. The exposure is just everywhere around you, especially in Texas. So I say by that time when I was about 10, I vividly remember that Ohio State-Miami championship game.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because that team, you got to understand too, like that team was so gravitating for a young individual that sees black men just being able to be themselves in whatever persona that they occupy.
Right.
And that to me was like, oh, I see that in my own neighborhoods. That's cool.
Yeah. And that's why that one was interesting to me, because like the way I'm thinking about it is like Ed Reed is somebody that you were like aware of and is part of this team at that age, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you might have like I think you could notice, but like not necessarily get the magnitude. Like I had a real wild moment where I was talking to a college student a couple months ago. And I was talking to him about Miami football, right? And so, like, when I hear you talk about the 01 and 02 teams and be like, yo, these cats are just allowed to be whoever they were, I don't feel that way about those teams at all. Those are the ones after when they was really out here living the way that they wanted to. And it dawned on me, to that dude, like, if he's born in 1992, or this guy was born a lot later, like, he's born in, like, 1999, the 91 and 92 Miami Hurricanes, like I was talking to him and I realized he had no idea of what this Miami thing was. Like his mind is going to be blown when he watches the U or he reads that book because they ain't never been nothing like it. Like he had no idea that that thing was a thing. And like Reed is in that first generation of guys after they built it back up. And they're like, yo, we can't have y'all out here living like y'all was living before, man. Like we got to, we got to cool this out. So like, but it was interesting to me watching you as you were talking to him and, you know, talking about him and the squad beating up Shannon Briggs at the bar and not knowing that they were beating up a heavyweight contender, you know? And I was just thinking that and I was like, yeah, there was a time when college football was like that, guys.
Yeah, it was like that. And I think that's the fun part about this platform is that you can hear those things because it's easy to see that now with Twitter and all these different platforms where it's so instantaneous and people are so eager to go share that out because of whatever it does for their own following.
Right.
But back then, like, there ain't no phone you got to worry about. Everything's in a black book with all the phone numbers you got. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's very simplified in terms of the forms of communication. And quite honestly, there was an appeal for that. There was an appeal, but it wasn't something that, hey, we can benefit off of this as well.
Right.
So it's interesting to me because I feel like this is a lot, like, especially the Ed Reed one. Every time I think back at that one, this just felt like listening to an OG reflect on stories, like, in terms of how he grew up and just, like, trying to get a better understanding of how that perspective shape the way that he views things now,
right?
And those experiences, and like you said, like, I mean, not knowing who a heavyweight champion is, like, to this day, like, you can't imagine an athlete who doesn't know who a heavyweight champion is when he walks in. If he don't know, somebody in this whole crew, somebody gonna know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if this people don't know, the story was they were at a club or a bar or something like that, and it's like Ari, Brian McKinney, I forget who else is with him. Somebody got into it with Shannon Briggs, heavyweight contender, not knowing that Shannon Briggs was Shannon Briggs. And I can't remember what the precipitating factor was, but I believe it was Brian McKinney that threw the first punch. And then they were stomping out the champ.
But how do you not know this man, even if he's not a heavyweight champ? Shannon Briggs is a big old dude.
Like, yeah, they him too. like one thing about Brian McKinney, I don't know how big you have to be for Brian McKinney to be like, yo, that's a big dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how large does someone have to be for that to be it. And Ed's cool. I hung out with Ed once. Ed came. We were was doing something with Dan once, right? And so we were doing Highly Questionable. And then after the show, Ed Reed in a horizontally striped polo shirt that should have been a heel figure, but I think it was just a polo, just to firmly like fit the aesthetic. Just posted up at the Cleveland, just being Ed Reed.
Let me guess. Shades on. We got a cigar in his hand. His legs are crossed. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he's like one of them celebrities who everybody in the spot can know that he's there, but is not like, and I mean this in a good way, like he doesn't, the gravity is not just bringing the whole world over to Ed Reed. It's like Ed Reed's posted to the side. And if you go over there and want to kick it with Ed Reed for a little bit, you could probably do that.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Cool with that. But like if you want something that's going to ruin his vibe, you better know when to step out.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Every ain't going to play with that.
He is a New Orleans adjacent, as I recall. And look, New Orleans adjacent and New Orleans, two different things. However, adjacent, still something to keep in mind, like in the grand scheme of the discussion.
I'm trying to think of who else. Percy Harvin was obviously a great conversation that we had. It's funny because the people that I feel like I've had the best conversations, they come from certain regions of which I already enjoy the people who are from there. That makes sense.
Yeah, like, Percy from Virginia.
Exactly. So a lot of 7-5, Michael Vick from that area, the people, mm-hmm. Clinton Portis, the people we've had from the 757 area, like I have a ton of friends out there already that I really like the way they operate and the way that they think. And so having those conversations with them very much so takes me back into that space, which is very comfortable for me in a conversation which I enjoy. Same thing with South Florida, like you mentioned, North. I think for the most part, from Virginia on down, I'm going to have a good conversation with people.
Yeah. I wish I had been a little cooler with you before you did the Percy Harvin one, because there was the one thing I wanted to know that we did not get there, and that is about the time he beat up the wide receivers coach in college. That remains the best published Percy Harvin story that there has ever been, because I contend that was the day that Percy Harvin became the coach. Like if you beat up the coach and there is no punishment, you're the coach now.
It's a wrap. Like, how else can you have some level of respect or authority over this dude who literally just knocked you out?
You the coach over Urban Meyer too, right? Like the fact that Urban Meyer didn't come in here and do nothing. Oh, okay, cool. Percy Harvin, like Urban Meyer might be the coach, but Percy Harvin at the very least is what they call it, the sergeant at arms, right? Director of security, whatever it is. Like Percy Harvin is now the coach.
That's going to be a very, like you talk about the U, looking back into those Florida years, there's going to be some Gen Z kid right now that knows a Tim Tebow because all he does is in the news for the various conservative beliefs that he has.
Yeah.
And they're aware of these maybe other different people, but realizing the fact that all of these people have to be at the same college at the same time playing on the same football team, it's going to blow a lot of these kids' minds.
Everybody, I've talked to a lot of people who have had thoughts about that fact, because it becomes... those Florida teams become more interesting and the discussion like a little harder to do and to figure out exactly how to do because of Aaron Hernandez.
Yes.
Like before Aaron Hernandez, you know, for lack of a better term, became Aaron Hernandez, you already had this, right? Like you had the juxtaposition of Tebow and Percy Harvin. You got like Brandon Spikes, you know, on that squad. You got Riley Cooper on that squad.
Pouncey Brothers.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that. We have the Pouncey.
they deserve their own documentary itself.
Yes. And we have Urban Meyer, who we have to remember was in a situation where he had never really coached big time college football before. Like he had coached at Bowling Green and he coached at Utah. Right. But Florida, it was a different animal and it devoured him. Like Urban Meyer is probably the, like just strictly as a coach, right? Like I need somebody to put together a team and to get ready for this game. Urban Meyer is probably the best coach of his generation. Maybe over Saban, like any of those guys. Like, he is that good. Man, he got to Florida, and he was like, so this is how you guys make sausage, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was working so hard at Utah, probably, to just, like, get on the scene because all of these different external factors are holding him back at being at a mid-major. Then he finally gets to a powerhouse conference at a powerhouse school. He's like, oh. These are the rules, huh?
He got one of the three best jobs in the country. Like at that time, I think without question, the two best jobs in the country when he took that job in 2005 were Texas and Florida, because in-state recruiting meant something different then than it means now, right? Absolutely. Like those are, if you put every job out there and ask me which two I'd want, those would have been the two. And so he hit his lick at Utah at the absolute right time to get one of the best jobs in the country. He won two national championships and it all almost killed him.
Literally. And it makes you wonder, what all he does to be as great as you just mentioned, of someone being able to put together something so quickly and to have it so successful. Imagine, like, we talking about the hours that we put into the jobs that we do.
Yeah.
Like, the hours that he has to put in just to be on that kind of level.
Yeah.
And the health toll that it takes to be able to execute on that level.
Yeah. The other thing was, like, he inherited a best case scenario job, which is a great job where the problem the previous coach had was that he couldn't coach, not that he couldn't recruit. And so he got there and, all right, we already have players. Isn't that something? But it's still the SEC. Now we got to go get more. So how do we get, oh, that's how we get play. Whoa. And I got to get this guy, right? Because like at Utah, you can't make so many decisions about I'm not taking this guy because of any reason that's not football. But you can because they, you know, they'll be happy with 8 wins. Like you'd like to win 11, but you know, like if they get 8, they'll be cool with that. Man, Florida ain't trying to hear shit about your 8 wins, dog.
If we ain't win an SEC title and we ain't in a BCS bowl game, I don't give a damn what you accomplish.
Whatever it takes, right? Like everything that comes with Percy Harvin. Now, granted, everybody else would have put up with everything that came with Percy Harvin. But everything that comes with Percy Harvin is a no-brainer. Like Percy, the thing with Percy is Percy was ahead of his time. If Percy comes into the NFL right now, somebody can figure out a way. Like, can you imagine if Kyle Shanahan had Percy Harvin?
Sean Payton. I mean, you talk about some of these guys that already have dynamic running backs. Matt Rhule now, you know what I'm saying? In Carolina and that kind of system. He clearly would have fit better. And it's he would have fit the running back mold that we currently have right now in the NFL. But what's crazy, when I covered the Minnesota Vikings, when I was at the Star Tribune, the coaching staff there literally would share it. This is a wide receiver in a running back's body.
Yeah.
Like they literally thought this man should have been a running back because of the skill set that he had when he had the ball in his hand. It's unbelievable now. And the great part about it is that you're able to see now more teams and more coordinators really embracing the fact that, hey, this guy is really good with the ball in his hands. How can I make better usage of that rather than how can he fit my system?
Yeah. But see, they tried. I'll give it that with Percy. Like, because remember, Percy was a running back in high school. Mm-hmm. And so then he comes and plays at Ohio State, which really had that hybrid role where he could be a running back and be a wide receiver, you know, and they could figure that out. Because he was really the one thing that's interesting about those teams is outside of him. I mean, I guess you could say Hernandez, but he was playing tight end. They didn't really have a dynamic talent like around Tebow. They never had a running back worth talking about. Riley Cooper ain't no dynamic talent like it was Percy Harvin. Right. And so the league was not prepared to figure this out. But it's wild to think that Cordarrelle Patterson. And I think it works for Patterson because Patterson has more of a wide receiver's body. But the fact that Cordarrelle Patterson is still in the league and Percy Harvin is not.
It is mind-boggling. Because after Percy was left and was straight to Seattle, they clearly drafted Cordarrelle Patterson.
They got Patterson.
Another version of Percy. And I was there covering the Cordarrelle Patterson years. And it felt like every time he touched the ball in his hands, it was a touchdown. Kickoff return was a touchdown. Jet reverses that would go for a touchdown. It was unbelievable what this man could do if you just simply just gave him a quick screen. And just say, hey, go figure it out. Use your instincts. You know? If you get 10 yards, if you get 50 yards, it's better choice than putting the ball in Christian Ponder's hand.
Yeah, also, at the end of the day. Also, Patterson was out here like, whatever you need, coach. Patterson out here on the kickoff team. Patterson the gut on the punt team. Like, that's one thing I respected about him. He looked around and was like, all right, so this is what I got to do? Cool. Got it.
He's going to be basically like the way we view backup quarterbacks and just their longevity. The way these offenses are continuing to evolve, it's going to be people like Cordarrelle Patterson are still able to have 10-year careers simply due to the fact that every team is going to get to a point where they're going to need someone like him.
Yeah, he's got to be able to stay fast, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Ted Ginn is still in the league.
Yo, DeSean Jackson.
Yes, but see, Ted Ginn to me is different because every joke we got about Ted Ginn, aside from the jokes about him not being able to catch, are jokes about Ted Ginn going straight to the sideline, right? Joke's on you. Ted Ginn is in his 14th year in the NFL. Still fast.
He tapped his helmet trying to get out and get subbed out. Yeah. Hey, provided longevity now, so check his pocketbook. He is straight. He's straight at the bank.
I'm telling you right now, everybody who ever got ridiculed when I was younger about going to the sidelines, look at them now. Like, I'm like, I was too young for this, obviously, but like Franco Harris, people always talked about that with Franco Harris. Franco Harris always going to the sideline. Franco Harris out here, successful businessman, always walking around with a smile on his face. Eric Dickerson, they talked about him always going to the sideline. He looked like he doing pretty good to me.
He looked great.
Sean Alexander probably somewhere out here doing triathlons and everything else, right? Chilling. Like,
no need no assistant, no cane, no walker.
Nope.
He is great. Living life.
Like I say, Ted Ginn still out here blowing past people because he's like, extra yards. I get my extra yards when I run past you.
Ted Ginn would be a fun untold stories. I feel like he has some pretty incredible, him and his father, I'm sure they have some incredible stories.
Well, my understanding with him, I wonder about this because I don't really know him like that, but from people I've talked to who are a bit more familiar, he is a track dude, but was just a little too good at football, and his dad was like the football coach. Like Ted Ginn Jr., somebody who I don't mind calling himself Ted Ginn Jr., because he did have to differentiate himself from his daddy, because his daddy was the coach at one of the football powerhouses in the area, right? Mm-hmm. And I just always wondered, like, did you really want to do this? Because remember, he was supposed to be a DB. Yeah, he was the top defensive back recruit in the country when he got to Ohio State, but he was just too fast and they felt like they could do too much with him, and so they put him over there on offense. But he absolutely plays football like he'd rather be running track. And that, again, is no shade. He's absolutely the one doing it right.
Because he's probably making more right now than he would on a track.
making more. And again, he waking up in the morning, stretch, morning yawning, go run 4 miles, right? He feels
great. Eat a healthy breakfast.
he ain't take a single hit that he did not have to take. Man, for who? For what? You know? Now, let me ask this. Was there anybody that turned out to be, like, cooler than you had expected on Untold Stories? I mean, I imagine you expect most of them to be cool because that's why you got them all. But every now and then when you do those interview shows, you'd be like, yo, I didn't see that coming.
Let me think. I'm trying to think back on season one and who we had. I will say this. I don't know if it's necessarily the most coolest. I didn't realize how funny he was. That was Jamal Charles.
Really?
Yeah, Jamal Charles has an incredible personality. This dude is all jokes, like just trying to have a good time, cracking jokes. He was lighting up the room. That was the one in which I remember the production team in the back had to hold their laughs. Mm-hmm. And they were trying as hard as they possibly could, because he's sharing a story about him and his dynamic with Priest Holmes. And then after that, he starts sharing the story about how he actually ate an edible locker room because he thought it was a piece of candy and he has a sweet tooth and he grabbed it, ate it, didn't ask any questions to anybody, goes into a meeting room, and he's just busting out laughing the entire time in the meeting room. The coach is literally just going through the game plan, and he's just laughing his ass off. And everyone's like, yo, what's wrong? And his teammates end up finding out that he ate the edible, and he just starts to panic. This is an experience he's never gone through before, and it was just unexpected for him. And as he was sharing that whole story, I just remember the production team is like, some of them are just... you know, just trying to hold it in as much as they probably with their hand over their mouth. He was having us rolling. And I did not expect that because he came in kind of shy and timid. And also, I don't know what it is, but especially in his career, it just felt like I didn't really see too much of that personality when he spoke, when people speak of him too. And yeah, there's no reason to expect that from him.
Yeah, that's interesting. My buddy Nick is cool with him. Nick was in Kansas City, and I'd never really talked to him too much about Jamal. Jamal's story is interesting too, because I remember he left Texas early because his freshman year at Texas, you know, he's the fastest dude anywhere to be found, right? Then his sophomore year, he fumbled too much. Mm-hmm. And that kind of kept up into his junior year. And then the last half of his junior year, he was a machine, like, because he was just so damn fast. And so he wasn't like a first round pick. But I remember, I think he suffers from a learning disability of some sort. But he finished at Texas in 3 years. Like, that was why he wound up leaving.
Incredible. Yeah. His involvement in the Special Olympics is definitely should be commended for, because he definitely has a great heart. And people always share that side of him. And obviously, it's very commendable with that. But just being able to be around him in that space where you could just kick it, and it's not like the way people perceive you is just genuinely who you are. And seeing that come out of Jamal, like it's still one of the more memorable and surprising appearances that we've had so far. Victor Cruz was cool too. I will say that. I guess it's kind of expected, because the way Victor Cruz holds himself. But that Victor Cruz episode, it was good. It was a good time, man. It was a really, really good time.
That was really good. And on Jamal Charles, I will say this, and I will let Gabe decide whether or not we need to play the elevator music over this. But if you ever get a show called Awkward Stories, we can discuss that Jamal Charles was allowed to participate in the Special Olympics in his youth. I understand that if you qualify, you qualify, and if you're the best, you're the best. That just don't seem fair.
Ain't nobody over there looking for the footage on that one.
I'm just telling you this right now. Somebody's father was furious The and first he was right. time this dude showed up.
He was very well right.
Yeah, like the first time that, like, just, I just can't imagine though how awkward that would be to be like, yo, it's one thing to ask for somebody's birth certificate, right?
Yeah.
Another thing to ask for somebody to verify whether or not they should be at the Special Olympics, because I imagine the young man who finished in second place put up a very impressive time that no one will ever remember.
Because everyone was wondering, who is that?
Right. Like, why did this guy just run a 10-3 at the Special Olympics? For people who don't understand this, I'm being dead serious right now. When Jamaal Charles was younger, and he's talked about this, what helped develop his confidence as an athlete was his participation in the Special Olympics. And I've just never heard a professional athlete have that story, which just leads me to believe that he must have been a legend in those parts.
If there's a Hall of Fame, he's
got to be in it. He's got to be in it. And you know what? That's not what that Hall of Fame is for.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, that's not why that Hall of Fame would be built. But Jamaal Charles would be.
His name would be on the building.
Look, man, I'm just giving you guys all facts, man, because I saw a story that once came out, and I think, and like, his work with the Special Olympics is like really commendable. Absolutely. And he was at a banquet, you know, and he given some talk. And I can't imagine like how cool it has to be for the Special Olympians to see that there was an NFL player, a very good NFL player, who participated. All of that, right? Like,
absolutely.
It was mad heartwarming when I saw it. And then I was over there, but like, hold up though. Wait, and I don't think, and I'm just here to say this for the rest of y'all. It's okay to have that thought. It's a perfectly reasonable thought, right? There's a measure of cognitive dissonance that is at play here, because he was out there in like the World Junior Olympics, like in track, like when it got done, the Olympics that aren't as special, he could have been in those too.
And he was probably dominating those.
Yeah, like if he had dedicated himself to track, he could, I'm not saying he would have been the fastest dude in the world, but he was that level of track star.
Absolutely. It's even mind-boggling to think of that, because that in itself would have made him a star as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nah. Regardless of what he would have done, he would have accomplished and been recognized for his accomplishments, because it was that damn special.
Now, let me ask you this, switching gears a little bit. And it's part of why I asked you about like having Ed Reed on, even Victor Cruz now, because I guess Victor Cruz is now a dude that's in his mid-30s. You know, are you noticing, like, are there any differences that you could really point to that you're noticing in when you talk to, like, some of the older cats versus, like, talking to some of the younger dudes that you've had on there?
I found myself starting to do this maybe probably about a year or two ago with PK Subban, because I think he had just turned 30.
I love the idea of him. Like, I need to meet him, because the whole right? idea of him, I love.
Right? And so I think he had just turned 30, and I was just, I don't know how it happened, but the conversation was brought up. And I was just, for some reason, just wanted to ask him, like, hey, what are your 30s like? You know, just while we're on set. And just hearing his perspective on it, because someone with that kind of perspective, and as he just said, someone that there's a great deal of respect for PK. And just understanding how he views that time space, for me, it's just beneficial for me. And I feel like it'd be beneficial for the audience and maybe in a similar space, because we all have been through that space, whether we're going through it right now or already have gone through it, in terms of just how we view the turn of our 20s, our 30s, our 40s, you know, and as we enter that next decade of our life, trying to map out what the next decade of our life is going to be like, even though at the end of the day, we really don't have too much control in that and how things shift. But you want to be as prepared as you possibly can be. And so people like Ed Reed, people like Ricky, I always like asking, with Martellus Bennett, who we've got coming on the show here at some point this season too, I like asking these people those kind of questions because of just how different their approach is on life and how they've been able to find fulfillment within that, or peace or happiness, whatever the case may be in terms of what they're trying to chase and pursue. For me, it's just great to hear that perspective and that side of them. And I feel like on the audience side as well, just it provides a better understanding of who these people are, which serves back to the purpose of what the show is all about. So there's certain moments in which I'll pick and choose to do that in terms of what we try to do, try to keep it lighthearted, try to have fun. But I'm trying to have more flexibility with the way people view this platform, where you can have more serious conversations in that kind of way, more life conversations in that kind of way, where it's not always just about, hey, I just got drunk and I had a great ass game, or, you know, or I punched a dude in the locker room and we still won a Super Bowl. You know, right. It's trying to just evolve the conversation. And I think it reflects back on my own growth and my own evolution, you know, and as I keep growing in that space, I don't know, it's just gonna be interesting to see what are the questions or conversations I ask. Cause I look at like Charlamagne, just following his career, because obviously the Breakfast Club is iconic in terms of its state and its place in hip hop and just in media in general. And just seeing how the evolution of what Charlamagne was asking 10, 15 years ago, and now what he's asking now. He's asking about like stocks and bonds and, you know, like things that he's involved in, because he's more so taking a lot of entrepreneur ownership roles in his own personal life. Whereas before, it'd be like trying to ask about some messy stuff that's going on with a rapper or an artist that more intrigued him, you know, right. And just being mindful of those evolutions as interviewers that people just naturally go through. It's interesting to note, because it seems like everyone goes through that stage at some point.
Yeah, man. No, this is, and I'm curious about this for you, like interviewing and doing more and more on camera interviews. It is very interesting. And I think you probably noticed this, how you get more comfortable. And like, as people know who you are, you can get more out of them because they trust you before they show up. And mm-hmm. your show just gets better just by doing it more and more.
Mm-hmm. Season 2, episode 1, first episode we had when we started back up season 2, hearing Darrell Reviews be like, yo, I love the show, happy to be on. And just being able to have that guard drop with Darrell Reviews, who's a very private person and is already going to be a hard person to have a conversation with because he just simply doesn't trust a lot of people. But knowing the amount of respect that he already has for the show, it makes the conversation a lot more smoother to get to the point, like you just said, to get a better understanding of who Darrell Reviews is and what he's been through. And that part to me has been more enjoyable. I've loved that process because I really get to genuinely get to know these people for who they are.
Nah, man, that's a move. Now, I want to also talk to you about something that I think we talked about, but I can't remember if we did talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it with you right now. You are from Dallas. You know, I am from Houston, so...
Dallas, yeah, baby, stand up. Y'all already know what it is. 214-469-972. We out here, baby.
No, actually, people don't know what it is at all. Like, that's the thing about y'all.
Fort Worth, while we here too. 816.
Oh, wow. Wow. Y'all must be real thirsty if y'all got to put together a coalition so bad that y'all actually include Fort Worth.
Hey, that's how we roll. Hey, get big or go home. That's how we roll.
Yeah, y'all don't include Funky Town until y'all need to Voltron it up. Like, that just like y'all feel like y'all ain't got enough numbers.
Hey,
that's what y'all go ahead and do.
Who's it out there? Leon Bridges? We got to rep him. You know what I'm saying? No, but, you go tell everybody.
I can't remember, but you heard who's going to be the color man on the Washington-Detroit game this weekend, huh?
Oh, Aqib Talib. Yo,
yes. Yes. Because if you did not know, I absolutely wanted to tell the people about this.
Yes. Yes.
Aqib Talib will be doing color. And I'm just like.
Richardson Berkner's own. Stand up. North, like, Texas.
I can't be the only person that is wildly excited about this. I'm so curious how this is going to go for a couple reasons, right?
Yes.
Number one.
Talk to him.
Fox wouldn't put him on if they didn't think he could do it, right? Yes. Like the people at Fox would not put this on. They're not putting it on for the reasons that I want to watch, right? Like, somebody there believes that he is good at this. Number two, it is interesting that he is not trying to do the opinion type stuff. He has decided he wants to do color, and clearly went and got an agent to do this, and clearly put in some grind to do this, and now he is going to be there. And I just want to know what kind of color man Aqib Talib plans to be.
I don't know either, but I wonder how much Tony Romo get in that bag. Aqib was like, oh, they making that kind of money doing this? All I got to do is talk about the same I was talking about these meeting rooms? I admit.
And a DB is perfectly built for it because they used to watching the game from out.
Yes.
Right? Like, he'll be breaking his coverages of what people want to know about, right?
They know every single part of the field. Cornerbacks don't get enough credit for knowing the entire play and what everyone's role is on that play because they're isolated. Everyone just thinks, hey, all he has to do is just stay in front of his wide receiver, man. And as long as he do that, he good. Not knowing the complexities and intricacies that go within that, I think he's going to be good. I could see a scenario where he's going to be good at this.
Oh, I could absolutely see a scenario where he was good. But I also remember, and something like this probably won't happen, but are you familiar with Lamar Thomas?
Nah.
Lamar Thomas.
How back you taking me right now?
Lamar Thomas is, he was on like the 91 Miami team. Lamar Thomas is a coach now. I can't remember where he's working as a wide receivers coach, but he is like iconic Miami Hurricane type dude, right? So anyway, I want to say it's the year 2006. Miami played Florida International at the Orange Bowl, and a giant brawl breaks out. People on the ground getting stomped out or whatever it is. But, you know, the color commentator on the radio broadcast for a college is typically an alum of note, a former star from back in the day. And in this case, the former star was Lamar Thomas. And the fight started, and it went on, and Lamar Thomas sounded like Lamar Thomas would have if he was on the field. He was like, oh, no, yeah, that's right. You can't come in OB with that, baby. He was just cheering on the fight. He loved every minute of it because Lamar Thomas is the kind of dude who would love every minute of something like that. And I don't think that he was on the radio no more after that. And so now I wish that Aqib Talib had been there in that Saints-Bears game when that dude got his mouthpiece snatched out of his mouth and then got smacked up.
All I heard from this was Lamar Thomas was ahead of the game because that's exactly what I want for my commentary these days. Keep it a buck. If that's what you feel, let it out.
That he 100% kept it a buck. That would be the best way to describe the way that Lamar Thomas handled that. But I don't know. Is America ready for all of Aqib Talib and that nasal Dallas accent? Do y'all Dallas dudes realize you don't have the Dallas sound, but you know the sound I'm talking about?
I know the sound, and I know after 6 months of staying here, I just moved back about 2 months ago. Give me about 6 more months, I feel like the sound coming back. The Tex-Mex love is already coming back. The Whataburger. I feel like I'm back in tune in my environment. The next thing coming after that is absolutely the accent. And I just got to make a decision. Am I just going to keep staying in this space where I have a professional voice and a Texas accent? Or am I going to try and merge this thing up? I don't know how this is going to work, man.
Yeah, not a Texas accent, a Dallas accent.
Okay, y'all, my bad.
Yeah, y'all's different.
Right. Y'all's right. Different. We are different. Absolutely. You are absolutely right.
I don't know how it is that it's not even an accent but a tone. Like that's the wildest thing I was trying to explain to somebody about Dallas the other day. I was like, they don't have an accent, they got a tone. And it's the only place that I could think of where I'm like, your accent is a tone.
And that's why it's so beautiful. Dallas is the best city in the world. Straight up. Let them know. Absolutely. You see every company coming over here, man. Every company. I didn't even realize Panini America was based out in Irving, Texas. It's like 10 minutes away from me. Everybody trying to come to Dallas. We about to make a movement.
There's a reason why the land's so cheap. Don't nobody really want that. I'm just saying, I don't really hear too much about people. Like, I hear all kinds of times about people, like, wanting to go hang out in Houston for the weekend, wanting to go move That's to Houston, cool. all that stuff. I'll never hear nobody say they're going to do that with Dallas.
If you know, you know. We don't want you anyways. You go to Houston.
Yes.
You're going to have a good time here. Now, we all them folks from Memphis, Atlanta,
Memphis,
Florida, you know what I'm saying? New Orleans, they know what's up. You know, Virginia knows what's up. Yeah. DC knows what's up.
Let me tell you what Memphis really knows what's up is Houston. Houston is like a place to have a pilgrimage for dudes from Memphis. Like Houston is kind of Memphis all grown up.
I feel like Young Dolph has a concert in Dallas like every other week. If he's not doing a concert, he's hosting some sort of club venue.
Young Dolph, by the way, a surprisingly young man to be named Adolph. I did not know we were still making Adolphs as they rolled another Adolph off the line.
He's under 40, so you got to think that was like 40.
40, like 40 is too young to be an Adolph. Like, the next time you should be hearing about an Adolph is in an obituary. It is wild that people were like, look, I'm just going to ride this out. My daddy's name was Adolph, and your name's going to be Adolph, too.
Adolph Thornton Jr. was born August 11th, 1985.
So this means that Adolph Thornton Sr. was the first... But after we had decided, we ain't doing that no more. How distinct does a name have to be for us to take it out of rotation on the basis of what one person does, right? Like, if it was William Hitler, we're not taking William out of rotation. But it's Adolph.
Adolph is so distinct. I don't know another Adolph. Two Adolphs. I know two Adolphs, Young Dolph and the one we don't want to speak about.
Well, think about this. Have you ever heard of another person on Earth whose last name was Hitler?
No.
Like, and I haven't seen this day. And I don't know how common a last name Hitler was in Germany. I have no idea. But I feel like somebody in Germany had to look up and be like, nah, that's not
we're doing a complete rebrand. Nah, yeah. We rebranding this joint.
Not only we rebranded, we getting on the next thing smoking to America. We got to go. Like, they gonna remember us as Hitlers.
This ain't it. And I guess the question now is there gonna be an Adolph Thornton III? Or is there an Adolph Thornton III? I think that's the question that you could just genuinely ask Young Dolph at this point. Cause he's I don't know if he feels some type of way that name. But I would have changed his name just to Dolph Thornton Jr. Because Young Dolph is a dope rapper name, if we being quite honest.
Yo,
off. Like, I love his music. I love his persona. I didn't know it came from Adolf.
Yeah. We got to move on from the Youngs and Lils, though, man. Like, we are now like 25 years deep into Lils, and we're a good 15, 20 deep in the Youngs. How are we still doing this?
And now they changed the Young. Like, they don't spell it like Young. They spell it Y-U-N-G.
Oh, yeah.
I'm keep like how Lil became Lil, L I L. That, like, that's the evolution of this thing. I don't know. I guess it's a successful branding marketing part of your name that if you ain't got that in it, are people gonna really rock with it?
I will say this though, I have to applaud a lot of these Lils for, I guess, some measure of self confidence.
Feel like I'm gonna be the one.
I wouldn't just keep reminding people how Lil I was. You know, like I respect Big Sean. The most ironically named rapper in the world. Like, I met Big Sean, one of his shows. He's a cool dude. I got a picture with Big Sean I got to find. And I'm here to tell you, there's a disparity. There's a gap.
Between him, Notorious B.I.G., Big Mo. Like, if you call Big within your community, there is a reason why.
Typically, yes.
Typically.
You don't get to appoint yourself Big.
Yeah, you don't. Like, it is anointed to you and everyone just rolls with it. For him to be called Big, I'm curious how the hell he decided to say, yo, I'm gonna be Big.
I'm just gonna do it. Like, yo, he's out here like, yo, man, I be living in spite of. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Like, that's the way he kicks it. And he was, like, secondarily part of one of the most hilarious, like, stories ever. Did you ever, like, because is he still dating Jhené Aiko? Or he was dating her, right?
No, they kind of on and off. They're good friends. I think they're back together now, though.
Okay. Yeah. But I'll just never forget that apparently he met her while she had a boyfriend. And she said the two of them were friends, which is entirely possible, right? Like, I'm not casting no spurs on nobody. I just know that he invited her to come to a basketball game with him because he had courtside seats. And she was like, oh, I've never been in courtside seats before. And I was like, yep, and that's when it was over for you, buddy. Like, for that other dude, there was no. If you were not in a position to get courtside seats yourself, because I ain't even mad at her. Like, somebody got courtside seats, I'm going. I don't care who you are. I'm going if you got courtside seats.
That man trying to stop the count.
Yeah. Like, that's it.
Hey, where were you at the other day? Oh, you know, just courtside, you know what I'm saying? Like, game. At that point, like, what else do you have to offer?
Right, we're not talking about this when you get back home. I don't want to hear. I saw the game on TV thing. I know what the score was. Yeah, nah, we just not. And you went with who? Like one thing about it. She might have thought she was just going with a friend. Big Sean knew what time it was.
He absolutely did. Absolutely did. And the fact that they still really good friends and now have post pictures of each other, I feel like, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Really show, I mean, hey, what Big Sean tried to accomplish, hey, salute, dog. I hope one day I can get courtside seats and do the same thing.
Courtside seats for the Lakers, right? It don't even matter if the Lakers are good at this point, right?
Nah.
My man said, I got courtside seats. That's just what it's got.
That's cheap.
That other
man.
Dude.
That's
cheap, it was a rap. Man. It was just a rap. Like, sometimes you just gotta look up and
I heard from him.
You gotta realize that nope. I am no longer going to be able. Like, you just gotta hope after that has happened that she just really didn't enjoy it. Right? Like, you gotta hope that he was really annoying or like a jerk or something like that. Cause if there's more courtside seats where those came from.
Buddy, them Olive Garden dates ain't gonna work.
No, I'm trying to think of who would have to tell me they got courtside seats, and I'd be like, nah, I ain't even trying to do that.
You have enough enjoyment or fulfillment that you can find from the fact that your feet are touching the floor, and for some reason this ref keep getting in your way to watch. Probably at the time, who was Kobe playing?
Yeah.
You know, like there is enough there. There's gonna be other celebrities there if he happens to be annoying. The date or she or her happens to be annoying. There's gonna be other celebrities that you could look at.
Yeah.
Potentially talk to because they may be sitting next to you. You can find your way to work around a 3 hour date if the other person is so damn annoying and intolerable.
I mean, I tell you, Big Sean had courtside seats and asked me to come. You better believe I go. I'd laugh at all his jokes. Yeah,
selfie real quick, you know what I'm saying? Make sure I get one for the gram.
Like, man, I didn't realize your legs were so long. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do.
But you pick it out on in person.
Yeah, exactly. Court side seats. Like, oh, man, they be lying about you, dog.
You're all right with me, buddy.
Yeah. Whatever. That would be the game, man. So, man, what else you working on these days?
Man, definitely we're trying to build our untold stories. I think we're finally going to get to a space where we can kind of evolve beyond kind of this group of athletes that we've been targeting with retired players. We've got a lot of feedback from the audiences that have been asking for cross sport capabilities and also incorporating active players. So we're working on that part right now. And then beyond that, man, just spend a lot of time script writing, man. Like, just, I don't know. I still enjoy writing and don't really have the opportunities too much to kind of hunt down and write a story. And for me as well, that whole process to me doesn't allow you to also own what you write in terms of an IP perspective. And the way the game is changing right now, I mean, IP very much is what you should be searching for if you're in the media game. And so trying to find different ways to own IP and the things that I write that could still capture what it is either that I see, or the conversation that I have, the interviews that I do. And so, man, just been spending a lot of time, like just waking up at 4 a.m, just writing things down, just trying to get different concepts from my vantage point, my perspective, or things that I've seen or things that I'm interested in that I feel like could make for a good show, a good documentary, a good TV series. That part to me has been very enjoyable. Cause it wasn't something I ever imagined doing. You know, I remember seeing how many influential people that I saw on the TV screen that helped kind of shape and mold my perspective of society. I think about like the Bernie Mac show, which to me, the way people older than me speak about the Cosby show, I feel like Bernie Mac show was that for me. It's just a more authentic perspective in terms of what it's like to be a Black family in America. And the role that Bernie Mac played there was just incredible. Being able to articulate the complexities that come with fatherhood and things like that, that I'm just going back on and rewatching now and just trying to figure out a better idea of why did I enjoy that so much? Why did that resonate with me so much? What was it about the writing? What was it about the setting? What was it about the complementary characters? What was it about this world that to me grabbed me emotionally and then kept me in to where now I have such a nostalgic perspective on it and enjoyment from it when I go back and watch it on Hulu? Because that kind of feelings doesn't go away. And now there's access and opportunities to go back on those feelings and re-enjoy those feelings. You know, shout out to Netflix for bringing back all these Black shows that we all grew up watching on UPN, because you can have that same reflection period within that and seeing how we've evolved since then. And so, I don't know, it's just a good time. It just feels like with the way the industry's shifting, which is not discrediting at all. Obviously, all the layoffs that are happening, all the people are losing their jobs, which is very unfortunate. And something that for me, it's not lost on me, the idea that this is a very fickle industry that can literally get rid of you tomorrow. But you know, I've always been someone that tries to take chances. And it seems like one of those opportunities right now where it's a chance that I feel could be very, very fulfilling and something that I'm enjoying spending time just learning about.
Yeah, I'm just glad you were able to find joy with the Cowboys being so sorry. Like, I mean, bro, that, man. Like, you deserve a little happiness in the way they keep kicking you in the stomach every week.
The Cowboys are doing that to me. Pac-12 football comes back while COVID cases at all time.
Yeah, you
high.
Was ignoring my text about Arizona State blowing that lead. You think I ain't noticed that, but I did.
I didn't want to talk about it. I spent all this time talking trash to you and Joel Anderson about how trash Texas is, how trash TCU is, and it felt very, very satisfying because I did not have to watch ASU on a Saturday blow a 2-possession lead with like 3 minutes left and not capture the onside kick. And they did this right before the Pac-12 is more than likely going to have to suspend play because this COVID situation is crazy right now. Why would you embarrass me in public in front of all of my friends and I don't get another chance for redemption? I am mad. I'm still mad about that.
Yep. Best thing to have to be all weekend, man. Fantastic. I loved it. It was great. It was wonderful, man. But look, that is Master Tess Foshee. Check him out. Untold Stories, Bleacher Report. You can find it at bleacherreport.com. You can find him on YouTube. Find him on Twitter. All that stuff. Check him out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassett, Tarika Foster, and Christina Buswell handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.